ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with one of your boys, Corbin Middlemass, with you today. There is no Ed Cowan. One more week. Now, I promise Ed will be here next Monday to chop it up with us on the ABC Cricket Podcast. But never fear, I always have a suitable replacement. George Bailey last week joined me for a great chat. And I got a message during the week too, by the way, when I threw it out there basically saying, hey, get in contact with us. We do have an email address, which is abccricketpodcast@abc.net.au. That's abccricketpodcast@abc.net.au. And let us know who are a couple of the people that you would love to hear from during this period while the IPL is going on, Ed's getting refreshed in some random part of the world, wherever he may be today. And Liam got in touch with me. And one of the first things that Liam said was, Corb, would love for you to have a chat with Ryan Harris, if you can bring him on. Well, Liam, I've done exactly that. The all-conquering coach of the South Australian cricket team, Ryan Harris, is my special guest today on the ABC Cricket Podcast. A man who took over 100 test wickets. He's got over 300 first-class wickets. He was an absolute warrior, sending them down for Australia for many years, and now he is taken to the coaching game. And boy, has he had success straight out of the gates. Won three of the last four major domestic titles in Australian domestic cricket with the team that I'll still call the Redbacks, the mighty South Australian cricket team. Twice winning the Sheffield Shield, the drought-breaking title, while then defending it, obviously in the season just gone, and then chucking a one-day title the year before as well to add to the list of accolades. His name is Ryan Harris, and I'm pleased to say he joins me as my guest on the ABC Cricket Podcast. Ryan, firstly, congratulations.
Thanks, Corb. Yeah, it's a nice feeling to be obviously sitting here again with a Sheffield Shield sitting in the room next door. It's quite a good feeling.
Well, that'd be South Australian cricket fans thinking, we would have just taken one. We had to wait like 30 years or whatever to get a drought-breaking title, and then you go out and you back it up away from home in a Shield final. And what a 12, 13 months for SA cricket.
Yeah, it has. It's been a great, well, 3 years since I've been back at South Australian cricket. So stuck here. So it's been a huge couple of years. And you know, the reason I moved back is I thought I could see some real growth in this group. And you know, we've managed, obviously, to have a change in the leadership with myself coming in and Dizzy sort of stepping out. But you know, the group of a great group of guys. You know, and they've shown over the last couple of years what they can actually do. So, and you talk about, you know, the game in the Shield final in Melbourne this year was probably one of the better games of cricket I've been involved in. It's easy to say that now because we won, but I think for a team to sort of be out of the game the whole game and then fight back in the last day and a half to be able to get the result that we did, I think it just shows the fight and the, you know, the determination in this group that I've got. And one of the things I tried to instill when I came in was exactly that. We fight, and it was a great example of that in the final, and they got the result that we wanted.
So I'm just going to pick up what you're putting down there, right? Your chat with Ned Hall on the ABC, which was, you know, moments after the last wicket fell, and you were quite emotional. Can you take us back to that moment? What made you emotional in that moment?
That's a good question. I got a bit emotional at times through the season with the players. I was probably a little bit emotional the morning of that last day, to be honest. I've been asked that a couple of times. I can't really put my finger on exactly why, but I just think it was it's just the group of guys I have that work so hard that, you know, I have a lot of respect for, and, you know, hopefully they have a lot of respect for me. But I just think to be able to come out and do what they did, as I said, we're behind the whole game. I think I said the message in the morning. As I got them, you know, at whatever what time it was, 9:30 in the morning, is that, you know, today wasn't going to define us as a group, whether the result went our way. It was all about, I think, what I remember saying was that we've already come a long way and we've already done such a great thing this year and being in a position that we're in to compete in the final. Today, you know, if we weren't to go, you know, if it wasn't going our way today, this is not going to define us. Us as a group now is a great group of guys. Who have a crack, and, you know, I had so much respect for them. And I got a little bit emotional probably saying that in the morning. So I think it's just the group that, as I said, I watch them train, I watch them work so hard to be able to get the result that they did. That's probably the emotional part there. And I just, you know, I've got so much respect for him.
I grew up in WA and I feel like I look at some of the issues that WA cricket faces and have done for a period of time and the issues that South Australian face, and it feels like they share a lot of things in common. And in the past it's been, you know, whether it's past players, you know, that feel like that, you know, they know the way and they want to do it a certain way, the connection with grade cricket, and we want to develop our own players. We don't want to just get people in from, you know, from other states or whatever it turns out to be, and the push and pull of that conversation all the time with every tier of cricket that goes into it. So from a South Australian point of view, I always look at the Shield team and it sometimes looks a little bit like the island of misfit toys. It's guys that have come from other states and all over the place. And yet, in a way that no one else has been able to for the last 20 years, Ryan, you've been able to harness that and get the best out of those guys. And you lived a little bit of it in your cricketing journey, obviously, happening to change states. How do you go about dealing with that aspect of it when it comes to coaching a complex state like South Australia with all those elements baked into it?
Yeah, I mean, we want to make sure, we want to have South Australians playing in this team. There's no doubt about that. But I think we just don't have the talent pool, and that's no disrespect to any of the club cricketers, but we just don't seem to have that right now. And we're working on that. We're trying to get, and we are getting, you know, some young players coming up through our pathways. We've got a great, a very good pathway system with some very good coaches. So we're sort of adjusting that. But ultimately, we've got a pretty small talent pool. And you know, being able to, and I have to put it out there as well, it's not me doing it. We've got a guy called Shaw Williams who's been here for 12, 13 years, who's our list manager, who's seen a lot of cricket. He's worked in Bangladesh, he's worked in India, he's been around the world. When I was coaching under 19 Australian stuff and doing the pathways of cricket for Australia, he was heavily involved in a guy that I would talk to a lot about talent. So we've got a guy that he knows a lot about talent around the country. He knows just about every cricketer playing cricket. And so he chooses pretty carefully who we want, who we need. Well, firstly, who we need, then who we want, and then obviously the personality, the person that comes in. So in terms of having a squad that's sort of outside of South Australia, again, we want South Australians playing. But when it comes to these guys not growing up and playing here as you know, coming through pathways, The massive advantage for me is that these guys are really, really close and good mates because they hang out a lot. They're really good back at their great clubs, their premier clubs, where they obviously choose to play when they come over, and they form relationships. But what they do is, you know, they've got such a close bond because they spend so much time together outside of training. So in terms of, you know, guys that have sort of missed out other states, and that's the bonus, I guess, we get. Obviously, a few guys from New South Wales, but then when they come here, they hang out. They're really, really tight. And people have asked me over the last week, they just seem to be a really, really tight group, and they are. They literally are. They look after each other, and they, you know, for me even, you know, not that I have too many disciplinary sort of things to do with this group, but, you know, it saves me having to bark at the guys all the time about this and that. They do it themselves because they're so close and they look after each other. So that for me as well makes it just a great group to coach, and they're a pleasure to coach, and they're all good mates, and they're all my good mates too.
I guess it's always just the structure of cricket that, the state selectors or state coaches are always nipping at the heels of the national selectors, saying, how come our guy doesn't get more attention? Do you get that from grade cricket? People saying, yeah, what about this born and bred South Australian player, and you should be doing more to try and put those guys in the team as opposed to bringing someone in from elsewhere? I mean, it's proven to be successful. You've done something no one else has done in 30 years. But how do you deal with those conversations from SA cricket people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exactly that. It's a conversation that we need to have. So we've got myself as a selector, we've got Sean Williams as a selector, and I've got Mark Cosgrove as another ex-player who's a selector who, you know, what we've done over the last couple of years, I must admit that the relationship between the SACA and the grade clubs wasn't great when I first got back here. So, it was a bit of that. We're not picking guys that are born and bred. But ultimately, you know, what I did, and sorry, I shouldn't say what I did, what we did when I started was that one of the big things was we had to have a good relationship with our people that produce our players. Ultimately, that's what we want. Again, we go outside at times, but so I got all the club coaches in and sat them down. And the thing about that is if they're inquiring about players that should be playing for South Australia, then their players are playing well, and that's what we want. The club competition stronger and it makes it a better standard. So we had the conversation about, you know, we understand, and ultimately we want a team one day with South Australians in it. But to to go back on what Sean Williams does, you know, he was saying that we just haven't got that. So it's the honest conversation about we are looking at players from South Australia. If there's someone there, we'll pick them. And if they're, you know, if there's not, then we won't. And we have to go into state, and that's the way it goes. But also, what we've done over the last couple of years, we use our second 11 as well to give guys opportunity to show what they can do, that perform in club cricket. So we're rewarding performance. And I think that's the bottom line is you've got to be performing well and, you know, exceptionally well. And I want them ringing me saying, why isn't this guy picked? Why isn't it? Because if we've got our state players playing well, if we've got our club players playing well, putting pressure on, we're going to have great, as I said before, really good competition in club. And then they're pushing our state team, which are going to be playing better anyway. So it all sort of funnels itself up to make sure that, you know, we have good, solid cricket that makes it better for the state.
You mentioned the culture of this group and how tight they all are. You've clearly had this mantra, sort of, you know, we, not me, and the whole team aspect that goes into it. How do you go as a coach that walks in the door, as someone that spends so much time in dressing rooms, whether it's as an assistant coach or, you know, as a player, obviously, and a senior player for the back end of your career? How do you go about building a culture? What would you say is the, if you were giving advice to a young coach or whatever about, you know, you walk straight into a locker room and you say, this is the imprint that we want to put on a team, how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. To try and put into words. I mean, I'm quite a passionate sort of person, so I think one thing, if you probably the way to look at it, I hope, is if you ask the player that what makes Ryan tick, it's probably the passion. And you know, I ride every ball with the guys. They see me at times during the game, which I'm obviously very careful of showing too much emotion. But I'd say it's passion, and they know that when they're doing or playing or whatever they're doing in a game or training, that they know I'm right with them. I'm riding every ball, every shot, everything with them. So I think the biggest thing for me is, like I said, I'm pretty good mates with most or all of the boys. Most of them a bit closer than others. Some a bit closer to others. But I just think, you know, the passion that I probably, you know, I played with a lot of passion. I coached a lot of passion. I think that's the way. That's me. It's how I tick when it comes to this game. So I think it's just more that they know that their coach and their coaching staff, I've got a really good coaching staff, that every time they walk on the field, you know, 11 of them are out there, that there's three other coaches sitting up in the coaching box, or four, that are absolutely right behind them. And, you know, and one of the things, like, as I say, a lot of the things that I've done in the past, I do get quite passionate, but I've never actually yelled at these blokes, and I never have to. And you know, the way that they just perform, and the way, yeah. So I think it's just knowing that I'm sitting on their shoulder, basically going into battle with them.
So no sprays, nothing.
I haven't. There've been times I've wanted to, but I've got a pretty good, as I said, a really good coaching group. That, you know, obviously most coaching groups do. You guys come off the field and you sort of take a moment to go through what you want to say to the group. And you know, there's a group that. A couple of guys with me, Stephen Stubb and Stephen Crook, Mark Cosgrove, who sort of, you know, talk through the player and what we want to say. It sort of calms me down a little bit. But I probably had one spray, and that was when I first came back. It was when I was the bowling coach. I wasn't head coach. I think about three games into coaching the guys, the bowling group, we didn't bowl very well for the first two or three games. And I remember saying to Diz, I'm going to try and hit these guys in between the eyes and give them a bit. And he said, mate, you know, you're only three games in and you might lose them. And I said, yeah, well, that's me. That's what I've got to do it, mate, because the way they're bowling, I'm not having it. And I said, if they keep going like that anyway, I'm going to lose my job anyway. So it doesn't matter. So I got them quite early, and it worked. And and they went away in their own sort of time and met as a group, as a bowling unit. There was about eight or nine of them. And one of them, Brendan Doggett, came back to me and said, look, we've caught up, we've had a good chat, you know, you're right. And I said, it wasn't about being right, it was just we've got to set our standards higher. And he said, yeah, we spoke about all that. And they did it themselves. They went and sort of problem-solved themselves. So I've got, I'm very lucky to have, you know, a group like that.
So talk about standards. One thing that we often hear from players is, you know, high training standards. And I think we've all seen sort of poor cricket teams at different times. And sort of, I remember going back to some of the grim years of even WA cricket, and you'd see blokes roll in their flip-flops and people would be kicking around the footy and they look like Brown's cows and there's sort of people all over the place. And yet I understand that that was something that was very important to you, that, hey, that training is going to be competitive and it's going to be taken extremely seriously. Talk us through what a session would look like and why that's important in the way that you go about it.
Yeah, that, and probably that was one of the things that I noticed in that year that I had with Jason. And that's no disrespect to Jason, it was the boys, but the training. But I just sort of felt as though we were sort of cruising through training, and the standard probably wasn't as high as it probably should be for a professional cricketer as a state cricket team. So one of the things I did, I came in, and you know, when we go out and train, boys still kick a footy around, they go and warm up, they do what they need to do. But as soon as we bowl that first ball, it's the same as a bowler. You don't run in and bowl three or four balls to warm up in your first over in a game. You know, as soon as we bowl that first ball at training, that's our training time, and that's we set our standards there. And that's so, you know, by doing that, as I said before, the standard of training is high. It's almost game like, and then from that you go into, so the bowlers have to be on because the batters are batting well. Vice versa, we've got a pretty good bowling attack. So if the bowlers are bowling well in the nets, the batters have to be on. And then that translates into the game. So when you come up against a Ferg O'Neill or a Scott Boland, that, you know, they're on and ready to go. They've practiced, you know, during the week and what they're doing coming to the game. And then what we are very lucky with here in Adelaide is we've got two grounds or two facilities that we use, the Adelaide Oval and Karen Rotten Oval. We've got unbelievable ground staff that, you know, whatever conditions we go to, we make. So we have a, you know, we go to Gabba, we'll have green tops. We'll go to Perth. We've got a couple of wickets that allow us to make us get a bit more bounce. And so we're able to do that as well. But so, you know, when you've got great facilities and you're able to do that, the standards of training are just unbelievable. And again, that's one of the reasons I believe that us as a coaching group have set up that have allowed these guys to realise that how good they can be and how hard they have to train, and also what it takes to be successful.
Every coach, you only got 11 spots in the team. So that means there's obviously guys that miss out. How do you go with the fringe guys? And often, you know, say when even Head and Carey come back into the team, there's always someone that then's knocked out as a result of that. How do you go coaching a fringe player in the squad that essentially is a full-time professional cricketer, someone that you've got under your watch the whole time, but not necessarily playing, not necessarily doing what they want to be doing or what I'm sure they feel like they can add to the team? How do you go about coaching them?
Yeah, it's definitely fine art, and I haven't probably nailed it yet, but the Head and Carey conversation is always easy. Coming down is always better than coming up.
Yep.
That's always the easy conversation. We've got a great group of young kids all I say to them is, look, I'm always available. I try and, you know, touch base with as much as I can. And again, it's probably something I need to keep working on with them. But if you're not in the team, there's a reason why you're not in the team. I always just say, you know, one, you're not playing well enough. I think two, you're not making runs, or the bloke in front of you is doing better. They're the three reasons I've sort of said to the guys. So if you're not in there, it's just you've got to keep going making runs. If you're making runs and you're still not in there, then it's, again, the bloke in front of you is doing a better job. So to try and keep those standards, as I said before, if you've got club cricketers making lots of runs and pushing, then that's pushing the standard of your better guys up. So that's sort of the theory behind that, or the messaging behind that is, yeah, you've got to earn your spot. Once you get it, you definitely earn it. But if you're not, then you're pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing these other guys at the top to do even better. And then if they're doing that, we're winning. So, we have a squad mentality. No doubt we have a squad mentality. I actually haven't. I've got to do that. So I've got to work out how many players we use this year. I think we used 23 out of 26 last year. So there's no doubt, you know, we've got some excellent rookies on our list. We've just done a couple of interviews during the week about new rookies coming on. It's you won't play this year. You might play, but you've got to make sure you prepare and train as if you are going to play. You know, that's the rookie compared to the bloke at the top who is, you know, whoever it is, Brendan Doggett, or you know, you've got to be prepared to play, or preparing to play every time you train, because that opportunity might come up.
We're a hardcore cricket podcast, so it feels dirty asking you about the first individual I'm going to ask you about is a guy who wasn't in the team. But he's the guy that attracts the mainstream media headlines in Jake Fraser-McGurk. And I find him just a fascinating figure in Australian cricket at the moment. I've been a big fan from the jump, which a lot of people have, but everybody in Australian cricket feels like they know the answer. I mean, you hear people in commentary, past players, he should do this, he should do that. And I have a lot of empathy for him, that this is a young man who was almost, you know, come straight out of school ready to be a professional cricketer. He gets put into a system. He has a little bit of success against the white ball. He earns big bucks. He finds himself in a different state. And now, ultimately, he's in a position that a lot of guys would be in their mid-20s. They're just trying to work it all out, which is what batters are doing all the time. But he does it with the spotlight of not just the Australian cricket community, but really global cricket. I mean, his name's in conversations for, you know, T20 leagues all around the world. And then you're there when, essentially, you know, he's playing a second 11 game for South Australia or whatever, and, you know, the lights of the cricket media globally are not on him, but he's just trying to work it out in the nets and everything else, and you've got him day to day. I just find it a fascinating coaching experiment when he's got all these noises in his head and people trying to tell him, and, you know, greats of the game, how to do it. How do you go about it as the guy that actually, you know, gets to spend, you know, a fair bit of time with him to try and help him find his way through what seems like a pretty difficult road to navigate at this stage in his career?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. I think the word you use there is time. We've had time with him this time, and when he first arrived, he had a good sort of time pre-season with us. You know, he wasn't involved in a lot of the T20 stuff that he found himself in a bit later on, and so he had the time to work on his game and work out what we call a method and how to play the game. And, you know, he did quite well in that first season. We had him in and out of the Red Bull team. He played all our white ball stuff, and he did last year as well. But, you know, and probably didn't nail it last year. But the one thing about, I sat with him the other day in his exit interview, and although he hadn't made a lot of runs this year for South Australia, what he's done by having time to be with the batting coaches is work through how to bat and build a game plan, as I said, and have a method and a strategy on how to bat. He hasn't, when he first arrived, he did a little bit of that. He came out and made his first class 100 and then went away for 15, 18 months. And I could see it watching, you know, in the IPL, for instance, where he's just, you know, he was obviously with a pretty good bloke over there, Ricky Ponting as well, who I thought, you know, gave him some good information, but then he sort of went away from probably what he was trying to do, and he couldn't get a run. He didn't get a run for a long time. So the 15 months away was good in patches, and then, you know, you could just see he was searching and trying to find the right way, because, as you say, he had a lot of different voices in his all, people trying to tell him how to do it. What he did this year was, again, he didn't quite nail the one-day stuff for us. He played one Red Bull game for us, but he actually made his first, he made two, I think it was this year, he made two first-rate hundreds, and he actually hasn't done that. He made a first-class 100 before a club 100. So he's gone away. He's played, you know, he's played a lot of club cricket this year, played a lot of second 11 cricket, again, done pretty well in that. So the conversation the other day was, yep, the numbers don't look great, mate, but you've actually made massive strides this year in the way you learn how to play the game and bat. And again, I'll credit Stephen Stubbins, my batting coach, and Mark Cosgrove, those two, probably more Stubbo, who spends a lot of time, and, you know, he digs deep into these guys and what makes them tick, and he felt as though he had to do a bit of that with Jake, and he did it, and he, you know, he's come out the other side of it. So yeah, not huge numbers, and again, disappointing white ball season for us, but he's the sort of guy, as you know, as you said, Corbin, you followed him, like he'll come out one day and he'll make 100 or 50 balls, and, you know, he won't slide, he'll just bat, and that's the way he'll do it. And, you know, and that's the talent he is, and that's why we love, you know, what he brings to our group and the potential he brings to our group. So we'll keep pushing him, and we'll keep giving him those opportunities, because once he works it out and he gets more consistent with it, the sky's the limit for him. He's such a good player.
I guess we're all a little misunderstood, particularly when we're in our early 20s, but he strikes me as the kind of guy that, you know, I think the perception of him from the outside is he's this modern cricketer. He's going to be a white ball player. He doesn't care about the red ball format of the game. He just wants to go out there and hit the ball over the fence and everything else. And yet, in my limited conversations with him, even as someone in the press chatting to him, when he talks about, you know, I want to be a red ball cricketer, You can see it in his eye that I believe him. Like, it doesn't feel like that sort of thing that he's just saying because that's what you're meant to say in Australian cricket, otherwise you get ostracised. And that actually takes a, even though because he's sort of, he speaks so confidently and he's, you know, he sort of pins his shoulders back and he gets around and he's a popular guy in the group, but he's got a lot of humility about him that I think, and even to do what you're saying, to be able to go back, strip back his game and go, right, even though I've achieved all this and I've earned all this money already in the franchise scene, I actually know that I've actually got to go back and actually build to becoming a batsman, which actually takes a fair bit of humility for someone that's already done what he's been able to do on the franchise scene.
Yeah, and exactly that. He wants to do all that you just said. Then he wants to play red ball cricket. He wants to be a test cricketer. He wants a baggy green.
Yeah.
Obviously, along the way, no doubt he'd like to make some more money as most of the boys do these days, and that's the luck they have with. You know, the franchise stuff, but you've still got to be a good cricketer doing that. You know, I think he's already found that. You know, he hit it pretty good in the auction a couple of years ago. But if you don't play well, no matter what you're doing and what format you're playing, if you're not performing, then that falls away pretty quickly. And so I think, you know, you're right. He's been through a lot as a young kid, that has had all that. But you know, there's no doubt that he's humility. Use the word humility. He's got huge humility. He loves. He's got so much respect for his coaches. He's got so much respect for his teammates, it's something that he's definitely good at that. But he's been up the hill and he's probably fallen off the hill now, and he wants to get back up there. And by doing that, he's working hard in his game. So, you know, we've copped a little bit of criticism around this year about playing him when he hasn't scored a lot of runs. But as I said before, when you've got a talent, a guy like that who, you know, he obviously brings so much to the game. He's not just a good player, good batter. He's a game fielder. You know, he brings so much to your group, and he's quite a popular guy in the group. You know, sometimes you just got to push through and give guys opportunities. They're not always going to, you know, score hundreds all the time, but what he brings to the group, he offers so much.
Let's talk about some other guys. If you had your druthers, and you could essentially say to Tony Dottomate and George Bailey and Andrew McDonald, I need to find a place in the test team for one player. Is there a guy in particular in your group that you think, gee, they got to get this guy in and around the test scene?
Bar out. That's a really tough question to ask me about with this group. So I love all of them. probably one at the moment. There's probably one that does stand out at the moment. That's probably Liam Scott. He just offers so much, and he's such a huge player in our squad. And I probably didn't. Well, we missed him in the first couple of games of the season because he was on Australia A duty. And when I first took over, I probably saw him as a guy that obviously batted seven, close to batting in the top six with our batting lineup. And a guy that probably just, as a bowler, probably was a holder to give a bit of our guys, the rest of the quicks, a break. He's just gone from that to a genuine wicket taker. And, you know, I think he bowled two of his worst overs in the final. He bowled two overs that went for, I don't know, 15 or whatever it was, or 12. And he came off and he was just absolutely disgusted with himself. But that's the sort of bloke he is. You know, he prides himself on his performance. And he has obviously high standards, but again, he's bowled two bad overs.
Wow.
And that's just, that's just the skill level he holds and the level he puts himself up to.
So what does his ceiling look like as a test player? Can he bat in the top six? Is he the third seamer? Yeah. Or is he like, what are you seeing being if he, when he maxes out?
Yeah, I definitely top six, no doubt about that. And so we try and give him opportunities, but with our batting lineup, it just works where he is at seven. But and then he's your third, fourth quick. I think he's about 130k. I think he is. So he's not fast, but he's just so skillful with his direction, his accuracy. He swings the ball both ways, and he's always putting pressure on the batter. So. There's no doubt that, he's a genuine all-rounder. He's your Shane Watson, who was the one I played with, genuine all-rounder. Probably where Watto finished, he bowled similar pace to Shane did. And obviously, Watto had an opportunity at the top of the order. But I see Scotty probably slotting in. He could probably 4, 5, 6, to be honest. I think he's good enough to be able to do that.
Do you chat to the selectors often, the national guys, about that the players, I guess, in your pool and what they could offer them?
Yeah, one thing we must say is that we have a great relationship with the selection group and Andrew McDonald. We're always in constant contact with them. I wouldn't say that I ring them to talk to they obviously call us a few times a year in summer and obviously back end of the year and they sort of run through the players that are contracted, and then they run through the players of interest. And obviously, Scotty's one of those guys. And but that, what they do, what they, I think what George does, and Andrew and McDonald, and you know, that Tony Dottomo, they keep in, they give great communication around what's going on, and that's one thing I must commend them on. And you know, if there's any questions that we do have about certain players, whatever, we there's no doubt the door's always open. We call them, and but they're always really good with that, with those comms.
Do you reckon Nathan McAndrew could play Test cricket?
I think he should have.
Yep.
Again, it's, who do you replace? Obviously, it's tough with a with a lineup that we've had for a while. But he had a tough year this year with a few little niggles, but he had vertigo most of the year, which you know, I used to hit balls to him, hit catches, and he'd be like a dog with a new toy. He'd be running almost the wrong direction, and you know, just chuffing it. You know, his eyes, he couldn't get his eyes level and stable. Right. So what he's done this year has been quite phenomenal. Still be able to take 40 weeks, yeah. I think it was, and do it. You know, there were times where he probably wasn't at his best, but he just kept fighting, and he you know, by the back end of the year, I think he found a way just to deal with it, and he started bowling probably, you know, to way he can bowl, and he, you know, he took a lot of wickets to the back end. Obviously in the final against Queensland, he took, you know, a good pile of wickets, and so he's had a really tough year. I think he's just a good cricketer. I would love to have seen him play a handful of Test matches, you know, up to this date, but I don't know if it's going to happen. It might be past him now, but I mean, if you talk to him, he's like, yeah, that'd be great, but I'm just want to keep winning here. Yeah. So he's got a great attitude towards South Australia.
Great segue. I was going to ask you about the importance of winning. So I know it used to drive the Victorian boys mad back in the day about, you know, they would have this great team, a lot of really good players, but often their guys were overlooked for national selection and they'd go somewhere else. And yeah, to be fair, Australian cricket's always been pretty successful over the last 25-30 years. So it's hard to say necessarily they got it wrong or they should have picked this guy at any one time. But do you think we value winning enough when it comes to selection? And I look at, in track and field, for example, there's a difference between being a really good runner and being a racer. And you look at someone like Lachie Kennedy at the moment, who's, you know, dynamic on the track, and he thrives in competition when there's guys alongside him, and it brings out the best in him. I wonder in Australian cricket where, you know, we often look at the next best player, but he might be playing in a struggling team, for example. Is there something to be said for guys that are actually winning and the importance of getting it done in games, and that wins and losses matter? Does it mean as much in cricket compared to just individual performances?
Oh, 100%, absolutely. And I think if I talk from a team perspective, I mean, I played for South Australia for 6 years, I think it was, or 7 years. And we talk about there, like the Victorian guys, we had really good sides. We just didn't know how to win.
Yeah.
And one thing I learned, which I carry with me a lot with the way I coach as well, is when I moved to Queensland to play cricket, you walk into that environment, they just expect to win. They knew how to win. And I took a lot from that. It's you don't even talk about the result not going your way and losing. And if you do lose, and it's like, well, you know, why did we do it? And then we don't do it again. And so you've got to have that. No doubt, I think winning is I think it's a culture. And again, one of the things I changed here a bit as well is, you know, when we play second level cricket, it's we're playing some young kids and give them an opportunity, and that we use it for that. Yeah, that's cool. But we've got to actually win. We've got to learn how to win games. Same as under 19s. I think it's a culture, to be honest. And as I said, I learned that hugely moving from a team that we had a very good team with, you know, Greg Blewett, Darren Lehman, we had a group of, a really good group of guys here in Adelaide to when I moved to Brisbane. And it's just you walk into those four walls in Brisbane, it was Queensland cricket. It was like, well, we just don't expect to lose. We're going to win everything. And they had been pretty successful in the years leading up to that. So I took a lot out of that, and I'm the same here now. I say to the boys, I don't coach to lose. You know, we play to win, and yep, sometimes it doesn't go to plan. And if it doesn't go to plan, then we work out why pretty quick to get back on the other side of it.
Sometimes it feels that, and maybe the way we talk about it in the press as well, where it sort of feels like, oh, they're talent pathways and they're producing players to play for Australia, or, you know, grade cricketers producing players to play for their state, and that's all well and good, but ultimately the aim of the game is to win, so keep the main thing the main thing.
100%.
Just on your own coaching journey, so if you were to look at what motivates you as a coach, what your philosophy is, like, who has a couple of the things, I guess, that, or what are a couple of the things that I guess you would base your philosophy as a coach around?
I mean, well, it's a good question as well. I mean, there's a few. I mean, having fun is one of the big things. Is that, when we come out and play, yeah, we get all serious at times. But the bottom line is, I write it up on the board every time in the change room. Is we have our three or four different points that I keep writing up, and the bottom line is we have fun and we do it together. And that's one thing that I just, as I say, what do the boys look at? I don't know, but I put it up every game. And well, I mean, they do have a lot of fun playing with each other. But the other, I think the other thing is just, it's hard. I always find this question hard to answer because putting into words, I've got a big philosophy written on my computer, but putting into a couple of words. But the other one is passion. I'm very passionate about what I do, and I think I want them to know. I want the players to know, again, like I said earlier, that whenever they go into battle, that I'm there with them, and I ride it with them. I get disappointed with them. I get happy with them. I guess that shines through a fair bit because I do the odd, rhino rev up, I think Dizzy used to call it. I do get them in a circle and give them a good, have a good chat with them. But so passion's probably one that I've had to learn a lot more of is as a coach is learning the game of tacticals. I was never a captain. I was never great at being a tactical person. So, I've been lucky enough to spend some time with when I finished, obviously playing with some really good captains, but on the flip side, on the other side of the fence, Darren Lehman got me around a lot when I was sort of learning how to coach. I've been with Ricky Ponting, I've been with Mike Hessen, the guys that I look back on and who are pretty good, ambassadors of the game and know the game pretty well. I mean, I played under Ricky, for example, and then I went and coached with him at Delhi in the IPL, and it's a great sort of example, I guess, of having to learn more. I would do the bowling meetings, and I'd sort of finish it and go, geez, I feel like I did that one pretty good. And then Ricky would stand up and say a few other different things, and I'd be like, yeah, I probably should have mentioned that. Yeah, probably should have said that. Probably should have done that. Probably should have said that to him. And it just made me think that, I mean, we all know what Ricky's cricket brain's like. It's phenomenal. But it made me think that, yeah, I've still got a fair bit to learn here about the technical part of the game. So I look back on all those sort of examples. That's sort of maybe the coach, or making, not maybe, making me the coach that I'm trying to be.
My next question was going to be influences, guys that you've sort of helped you along the way. So, I mean, Ricky Ponting, Darren Lehman, a couple there that you both mentioned. Is there any others you want to give a little hat tip to?
Oh, I mean, Buff's been great. From the start, he gave me that opportunity. Obviously, my career came to an end abruptly, unfortunately, with my knee, and I was able to travel with him a few times around and actually sit on the other side while the boys are playing, how it actually worked. Troy Cooley's probably the other one. He's one that I spent the whole time at Cricket Australia with. Obviously, he was a coach of mine as well, but he got me really going in the art of coaching, and he talked about the art of coaching, and just another guy with so much knowledge around fast bowling, but also being a coach and what it actually takes. So I guess those two. The other one's Pat Howard, actually, our cricket high performance manager at Cricket Australia. He was another one who I'm still in touch with. That very, very smart guy. Came in, copped a lot of criticism around being from rugby. Why is a rugby bloke doing cricket? But he was really smart guy that, and just he knew cricket a lot more than what people think. But what he didn't do is he knew he wasn't the expert on cricket, so he'd speak to a lot of cricket people as well. So Greg Chappell was around that time, Darren Lehman, Troy Cooley, so as well as some ex greats. So he was another guy that taught me, about coaching, but also a lot about business, just about how to be a person that relates to a lot of different other people and. When you're working in an organisation like Cricket Australia. So he was another guy that I guess I'll look back on, and as I said, I still touch base with him now, that gives me some good advice. So I've had some really good people along the way that have been, absolutely, given me some great advice. And again, I'm still on the journey. I'm not anywhere near finished. So I've still got a bit to go.
Your passion's obvious, and everyone that we run into in Australian cricket talks about that with you. We saw it when you played, and you were just such a warrior in the way that you went about it. And you don't seem like the modern cricketer in terms of scans and stress fractures and everything else. It's just plow on, keep playing, and everything else. How do you go with the, I guess, the modern player or the younger guys coming through or whatever it turns out to be? Have you had to Have you had to sort of almost catch yourself at different times thinking, right, I've got to have a broader lens here than just, hey, this is what I did, so this is what's going to work? How challenging has that been as a, you know, to deal with so many different personalities in a dressing room that obviously coaching would throw at you?
Yeah, very challenging at times. Has been. There is exactly that. Some of the mindset, well, the mindset I've had to change is, you know, especially from a bowling point of view, is, you know, some guys are sore. It's like, well, how sore are you? Can you bowl through it, or is it actually an injury? You know, if it's an injury, then fine. But if it's not, push on. And you know, there's definitely times where I'm a lot better at now. Obviously, I talk to the medical staff quite a lot. I still push them. The medical staff to push the players a fair bit, but again, you've got to be very careful doing that, because if it is wrong, it can cause sort of, you know, longer term injuries. So that's, again, I'm still learning how to do that, but I do push the players quite a lot, and I know, well, when they know, and I think that's the relationship I think I have with a lot of the players, if not all of them, that if there is something that's not right, I won't go through the medical staff. I'll go straight to them and talk to them, and if there is something not right, then they look me in the eye and I know straight away that something's not right. So, I think we're really good here with the way we sort of, I think most Australian cricket, to be honest, the states, I can't talk for the other states, but, you know, we always talk about, and I probably got a little bit caught up in it when I was started coaching in Cricket Australia around workloads and about this and that, and, you know, about, bowling not enough or bowling too much or bowling the exact amount of balls that the planner says, and that's it. You know, I did, but coming out of that, even now, I mean, we you know, quick, the season is quite a challenging season. So, our bowlers, the issue obviously we have is our batters have to face bowlers, and sometimes, you know, we don't always do that here, because we have to allow the bowlers to bowl once a week rather than twice a week, or if they need to bowl, you know, not at all, to be fresh for games. And, you know, so we're quite open to getting what the individual needs. And I think the other part of that as well is, if, you know, we still use the same planner. We still say there's 42 balls to bowl this week, this day, or each day. But we go on time. You know, and for bowlers, again, if the bowler's not bowling well enough, then he keeps bowling till he gets the right feel. And, you know, you can't go into... you can't go into a game knowing you bowl the right amount of balls, but, you know, 70% or 80% of those balls have been in the wrong spot.
Yeah,
you're not going to go into a game feeling good, right? So, you know, so we're really conscious of that here. And again, I've got a really good group, pretty experienced group now, that know what they need and how much they need to do before, you know, going leading into a game. So, definitely have changed my tune a bit on that. I was a little bit caught up in, I guess, in, yep, just exactly this, exactly that, you know, amount of, and then away you go. But I learned pretty quickly, though, that, yeah, the skill level, the only way you get better at bowling is to bowl. And, you know, even at times, as we talk about being injured, you know, sometimes you're sore. You've got to bowl when you're sore, because you're never going to be 100% feeling right. And if you are, then you're not trying hard enough.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to be sore when you bowl.
Two more for you. First of all, coaching a state team. So, I mean, cricket coaches are a relatively new thing in the history of the game, but obviously these jobs were incredibly popular for a long period of time. There's only six of them in the country. So, you know, they're always highly competitive jobs to have. In more recent times, though, it feels like, you know, cricket coaches, the appeal of, you know, the T20 franchise scene, for example, and, you know, you go away and essentially make, you can make an annual salary's worth in basically doing two tournaments or whatever it turns out to be, and that's 8 weeks' worth of work, and you can jump around and do a bunch of those. But it's in and out. It's not the sort of regular contact like it is to be a state coach, for example. What is it that appeals to you about this? Because clearly this fulfills a passion for you that obviously, you know, you like the idea of working with players and player development that goes into it that you don't necessarily get when you just roll up and get a collection of the best players in the world for a two-week T20 tournament or whatever it turns out to be.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I look at the opportunity to be able to do that. I do like the game of T20. I wouldn't say I love it. I love four-day cricket. I love five-day cricket. I love one-day cricket. I'm still growing the love for T20 cricket. I played a little bit of it, and I've coached a little bit of it. But,
yeah.
And the other part to that is I don't, and this is going to sound really, I don't know how it's actually going to sound, but I don't think a lot of that is proper coaching. I think you're looking after a group of men for 8 weeks, 10 weeks. You know, you're not. I mean, I've seen Ricky do it. Ricky's really good at it. He does coach a lot. And I've seen snippets of Justin as well, Justin Langer. But I feel as though, for me as the bowling coach, it was more, again, looking after what, you know, trying to preach what Ricky would say, or the head coach. But I didn't feel, and maybe because I haven't head coached in one of those leagues, I didn't feel it was proper coaching. And that might be another reason why I'm sitting here, not over there in the IPL as well. I might not have been very good at it. But I just find what I do here, this is a program. You get to run your own program. And I think, for majority of the coaches, there's a few guys that it just happens naturally, and that is the Pontings and Langers, because they're such strong personalities and good leaders and amazing readers of the game that there's not too many that you can just walk out of or I guess out of playing or doing what they did into a big coaching role like that. And to be honest, my name's probably not big enough either to do that in the IPL, which is okay. I don't mind that. So for me, and the other part of that, as I've said to you before, is I had to go back and learn a lot of the game, because I didn't see the game in a technical or tactical way that was great. It was just bowl fast, hit the top of off, and bowl the occasional bounce. And then when I had an opportunity with the bat, get as many as I could, hit the ball to the gaps. So that was the way I sort of looked at the game. So I've had to learn a lot of that as I've been through. But yeah, I think the opportunity to run a program, it really excites me, as you say. And it's funny when you say there's only six of us around. I hadn't actually thought of it like that. You know, and what we do, our jobs are, you know, pretty important in helping get cricket, you know, Australian cricket strong. And that's the detail of it. I haven't really probably thought of it in detail like that. But I just love the opportunity to run a program. I work, you know, I worked. I briefly did it with Queensland Cricket as an assistant and doing different things up there. I've come down here in South Australia and give me opportunity to I guess fulfill another dream. You know, playing was a dream, now coaching is a dream, and they've given that opportunity. And I work at a great organisation. I've got great people around me, and coaches. I've got a great general manager. I've got a great CEO, and I've got a great president and a great board. So I'm very happy with what I do, and they allow me to do what I want to do, and with the program, and run the program. So. And from now on, it's you know, we've set a standard now that, yep, we've won two, but probably after 4 or 5 weeks, once I have a break, we're going to win three and four and five and six. That's what we want to do. And that's, as I said before, I don't coach to lose, and the players don't play to lose now. So I think, yeah, long-winded answer again. I just think having that opportunity to work in to run your program or a program, I think that's what excites me.
Last one for you, and you're going to get this question a whole lot, I'm sure. And it's maybe it's the blessing and the curse of having success. It's great to have success, but often what happens when, you know, people are in successful positions or that they achieve well, everyone basically says, yeah, what's next? What are you going to do next? Where are you going to go next? It's do you want to coach the national team one day? Is that the I guess the end goal that you look at in terms of coaching?
Yeah, you're right. I've been asked that a lot in the last week again, or 2 weeks. I think ultimately, yes. I think it's like when, so the way I look at it, and I've said it a number of times publicly as well, is when you get into a job like in this industry, playing or coaching, is that, you know, you play well, you earn your spot. You know, in state cricket, you play well, you earn your spot in the Australian team. You've got to keep earning your role, earning your spot, and performing. I see that here now. I sit here, and everyone's, oh, he's got to coach Australia. Firstly, we've got a pretty good coach at the moment who's doing a bloody good job, Andrew McDonald, who I don't think will be going anywhere soon. We've also got another guy, Adam Voges, who won three or four state titles and how many, 15 bloody BBL titles. He's going to ride as well. So I've still got a long way to go. And there's a lot of good coaches around the country that, again, that are lining up for that job. But I mean, ultimately, yeah, I do want to do it, but I don't expect it to do it tomorrow. I'm still young in my coaching, as I've said to you. I'm still learning a lot about the game. You know, if the opportunity comes up one day to put my name in the ring, then yeah, if it's the right time and right, and the other part of that, if it's the right time for my family, because once I get on that bus, it's a long time away, and I've got young kids, so you know, a few factors there. But yeah, bottom line is, I'd love to one day. But again, I'll wait, earn my spot, earn my the you know the right to do it, and if that's next year, great. If it's 10 years, then that's what it is. But in the meantime, as I said, I'm working in a pretty good place, and I love what I do here, and I've got a bit of work to do yet. So.
You're a popular man in Australian cricket. It's nice to see good things happen to good people, and your coaching journey is certainly up and to the right. Have you got a holiday planned or anything exciting? What are you going to do in your little time, your small time you get before next season starts?
Yeah, I'll get through this next 2 weeks of kids' school holidays. I'm going to recreate myself from my golf clubs and try and
Nice.
get some nice scores. But just while we've been talking, my wife's been flicking through places for holidays next week. So
Awesome.
that's my next part after I get off the phone here to go and try and organise some time with family. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
We'll let you go and do it. Ryan, appreciate your time as always. Congratulations on all you've achieved so far. And we'll stay close. We'll chat to you soon on the ABC
Thanks,
Cricket
mate.
Podcast.
Thank you. Nice chatting. Thanks, mate.